Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the May 21 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing from Morton, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and Joe Vaklovic of Standard Grain from Chicago, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. We'll start our program as usual with a list of items to discuss for the day. We'll start with you, Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets.
Well, the concept of the speculators having these large net short positions in corn and soybeans and wheat also, I suppose, just how that is affecting the markets now and could affect it in the future. And maybe also Argentinian farmers hanging onto their soybeans, what the potential is for that to come into the markets. And, I mean, I suppose I'm not going to be the only person to mention this, but the whole corn versus soybean acreage idea.
Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing.
Yeah, Elaine stole my my one thing with the funds being so short in the wheat and the corn. Are we about to spark a short covering rally? I guess along with that, at some point, do we change the sentiment here from, hey, this was the best planted crop, fastest planted crop, in history on corn? Do we swing the other pendulum and say, uh-oh, the cold weather, too much rain? You know, do we ever have the scare this year? And if so, what do we do? That's going to be, I guess, the biggest question is, what do you do? What do you do when you see that?
Standard Grain's Joe Vaklovic.
First thing would be soybeans and acreage in particular. You know, despite the fact that we've got real low prices, we've got a record world-ending stock situation. Farmers in the U.S. and in South America are going to expand acreage during the 2015 calendar year. We're taking an already bad situation and making it worse. I'd also like to touch on old crop soybeans. The ending stocks number has done nothing but go lower since September, and I think that's worth talking about a little bit.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Well, we see this market bottom somewhere with the idea that there will just be bargain buyers at a certain level. You know, what is that level? Will it be $9? Will it be $8.50? Will it be $3.50? Will it be $3 in the corn? Something like that.
Well, let's start there. I think that's a good idea. Will we see it bottom, and do you know when?
Well, Elaine, or somebody's going to tell us.
I was hoping that you might be able to tell us. You got an idea, Wayne. I mean, you mentioned it, so there might be some place in here where we could bottom this market. And certainly soybeans are moving low enough, though corn seems to be holding fairly steady at this time.
Well, you know, we thought that 950 seemed to hold in the last month or so as far as the July beans went. We broke through that now, and now, you know, we're going to go in for the 925 and eventually the $9 is what everybody says. We were wondering if just as the reallocation of money and some funds, you know, we saw this a few years back where at some point in time they just say there is value here. And when is that going to happen this year with the supplies we have worldwide, or is it going to come in? We sort of feel that we'll probably get out of our short calls, you know, as we go down in the descorn down towards the, if we could get close to 350, well, we probably would stand aside for a while and see what the weather does. The same way with the beans, probably down under 910. So that's my sort of thoughts. I just wonder what everybody else's was.
I think we've already seen some of that value-type buying in corn. I think it started even back last fall. You know, the funds built up a long position before they normally would. And I think it's just the standpoint that, hey, we still have to raise a big crop. We've got big demand. So, and we may be to that point again where now they're short, but the same issues are there. We still have to raise a big crop, and big meaning near record, or we're going to start cutting the carryout again. And I wonder, you know, when I hear that, not to doubt Wayne at all, but part of my brain says, well, is there part of the trade out there that's looking for the value play in beans, and we don't get it, and the funds decide, hey, there's more value in corn and wheat, let's get short beans and pull the rug out from everybody. So kind of being the contrarian there on the bean side of the equation.
But let me understand this a little bit, because, and Elaine, you talked about, or you asked this question up front about the net short in the spec positions. I'm going to stay with you for just a moment, Chip. Are they net short on soybeans at this point, and are you suggesting they'll get more short than they already are?
Yeah, so they are net short in beans, but they're just getting net short over the last month or so, where they've been short wheat and corn for a long time. Record up until the last two or three weeks, record short in wheat, and a fairly sizable, I don't know, 120 to 130,000 contract short position in corn. So, you know, that could be kind of the spread trade of the year, I guess, is if the funds decide corn and funds or whether it's fundamental value, corn and wheat is cheap enough, funds get out of their short corn and wheat, and they decide beans are overvalued because of the large carryout in the world, and decide, hey, we want to build up a big short position in the beans now. So it could be some big shifts of money across different commodities from the fund side.
Okay, Elaine, we opened the door for you. Where do we go now with this conversation?
Well, I would come at this this bargain buying idea from a slightly different angle and look at what the commercials are doing. You know, I see you could have the potential to lock in some $9 beans or close to $9 beans. And on the board anyway, crush margins are about as good as they've been, at least in recent memory. You know, bean oil is still doing very well. Soybean meal is still above its October low, even though soybeans have fallen. So it's odd to me to look and see that the commercial hedgers have not been buying up, not been putting on long hedges very aggressively. They are net short also. So we have more people selling as a hedger than we have. A lot of buying interest has not come in even at these price levels. So what price level it takes to tempt processors, it's really hard to say. I've never been a technical trader, and I don't want to, throw a dart at the chart here and try and pick a price.
I think, but I'm not certain that I have both you and Chip feeling like the soybean market has the ability to have the rug really pulled out from underneath it. Is that what I'm hearing from the two of you?
Well, I think the potential for a really big surprising move would be from short covering. If you had some sort of a bullish scare, then yes, because everybody has these big short positions on, something very, very very sudden could happen. We saw that in wheat. We've been seeing short covering, and it went up 14% in a week. So that's the potential. But at this point in time, I absolutely don't see any reason for them to try and catch a falling knife.
I didn't quite misread that, but I think what I heard you say to begin with was that the processors, the end users, aren't short enough yet, or they're not taking long positions yet in this marketplace. So there may be more downside to it. Yet, if we get a weather scare or something, certainly a bullish pop is available. What I really want to know is how much further down you think the soybean market might go.
I really couldn't put a number on it. Let's say another 40 cents would get you, a very even $9 psychological support on the front month chart. But that's, that's just a guess. I really don't have a number for you.
Am I backing you into a corner that I am misplaced, or am I right in my direction on your thought process here?
Yeah, I think the natural direction is for it to keep, working its way lower. But if something bullish happens as a surprise, it will be fast to move up.
Joe Vaclavic, you're there in Chicago. Your assessment of the soybean market?
Well, to start off with the old crop soybean situation, the ending stocks projection has tightened up significantly. Back in September, USDA projected we'd have an old crop soybean carryout at 475 million. That number's down to 350, and it's because the crush has been very, very strong and exports have been very, very strong. So if you were to run into a situation here, let's say we had a perfect storm of bullish news, let's say we had a big sell-off in the U.S. dollar and we ran into a little bit of a weather issue this summer, I think there's plenty of upside in these old crop bean contracts in particular. I think farmers are sitting on maybe a little bit less than we would like to admit. I think that there were some good prices available earlier in the year, and farmers took advantage. All that being said, that those are a lot of ifs, and we don't have a weather issue. We don't have a collapsing dollar. So for the moment, we have to assume normal production this summer. If that's the case, we're probably still overpriced, and you've got to assume that South American acreage increases quite a bit again this fall. That's an additional bearish factor. Again, the farmers in the U.S. and in South America are taking a bad situation and making it worse by expanding acreage.
And does that mean you think there will be more soybeans planted than were projected in the USDA March report?
If I had to go one direction, I'd go higher. I've never had any luck out guessing USDA on acreage. At the end of the day, I think their original number, which I think was near 84.6, I think that's plenty of acreage to put this market at sharply lower levels if the weather cooperates.
Okay, Chip, I'm going to come back to you. You've listened to this and had some time to think about it again. Did I read you right as well, that you're really fearful that old and new crop soybeans could still go much, much lower?
Yes, I agree with that. However, the way I think it could play out is it's not just a waterfall, boom, we're at $8 type of a thing. It's probably going to be a slow death and take a while. I think in the short run, especially if wheat and corn, led by wheat, bounce a little bit, that beans could put a little bit of a pop in here. But it's probably not ever going to get high enough, barring a weather scare like we talked about earlier, for anybody to jump up and down and say, okay, now's the time to sell it. And I think by fall, it could be a case where we wake up one day and look at it and, you know, we're at $8, possibly even sub-$8, and everybody says, wow, it seems like yesterday we were at 9.5. What do we do now? Type of a situation. So longer term, yeah, I'm still bearish on beans. I think from a value standpoint, they have much further to fall than corn or wheat from these levels.
Sub-$8, you think you're bearish on beans?
Well, you know, if we have a 46 bushel crop, I mean, you look at it, you're talking about 9 billion bushels of beans between the Southern Hemisphere and the Northern Hemisphere. So never say never, and I don't want to give the impression to everyone that, hey, we're going to $8 because I'll look like a fool this fall. But if you look at a long-term continuation chart, there's plenty of reasons why 776 to 780 is doable in beans. Eventually, you know, it's not going to be next month, but there's a huge supply of beans out in the world, and the market's, in my opinion, not reflecting that yet.
Okay, let me make sure I've got this right. So it appears, barring a weather scare, I've got two that are bearish. And it sounds to me, of course, as if Joe is neutral to friendly, maybe even bullish in some respects, but let's say neutral to friendly. And Wayne, you were neutral to friendly as well. Is that right for soybeans?
Well, I think that we're going to work down probably, but I don't know where the level is. I'm not going to be highly bearish as of yet. I think that the farmers don't have as many soybeans out there as what we're sort of talking about. I talked to two elevators today, and processors have been calling all of them trying to buy beans, and they called their farmers, and they can't find anybody that's got a bin of beans. They got 1,000 bushel here, 2,000 bushel there, but nobody with 5 to 10,000 bushel of beans in their bin. So, you know, in the eastern part of in Indiana here, there just aren't any beans sitting around, and the processors bought them all up. So I don't see them just falling totally out of bed. But, you know, if we have those extra acres that Chip's talking we could get, if we would actually have good weather the rest of the summer, we don't have to be above $9 come this fall.
Okay, so this is sort of an interesting scenario, and if you've been reading and listening to what Darrell Good has written on the Weekly Outlook, his suggestion was that because soybeans are now a world market, meaning half of them are coming out of the U.S. And North America and the other half coming out of South America, that there would be a wide variety of thoughts from analysts. And that's been true across our analysts, not just the set of four that are here. However, that the corn market remains a U.S.-driven market on the global front. So now we get to talk about the disparity between corn and soybeans, I think, and whether 2-to-1 is really something that could be priced in for corn rather than 3-to-1 or something, you know, 2.4 or 2.5, which is closer, I suppose, to normal. And maybe, Elaine, you can take that up just a little bit. Can Can corn maintain value even in the presence of really low soybean prices?
Yes, I think it can, because, I mean, just nutritionally, these are two, you know, very separate food products. And it is sitting right now at 2.4 to 1, which is very normal, which leads to the idea that we are probably, in my opinion, I don't think that we have anybody, many farmers who are planning to switch acres over from corn to soybeans yet. I mean, this is only, you know, May 21st at the moment. So they've got time yet to put even corn in. So it's very high ahead of the rational planting pace. But just as far as long term, you know, I believe that corn can maintain its value because of its uses. I think it will struggle perhaps to lose market share to DDGs, continue to lose export market share to DDGs, sorghum, barley. Maybe some of those specialty crops can continue to get more acres in future years. But long term, I think that 2.45 to 1 price ratio is pretty well set in stone.
Wayne, have you been considering the price ratio for corn and soybeans?
Not that. What I've been considering is that on a survey taken today by a group of advisory firms, and like that was talking about, that they were saying to all the different areas around the country on a conference call that 35 to 50% of old corn is still in the bin on the farmers' hands. And that's scary to have that much left out in the farmers' hands at this time of year. I think that we've got an awful lot of corn to come to market before harvest and through the spring year, and a lot of people sat on their hands and without a weather or some sort of scare up here. And I think that we're sort of topping rallies, because now anytime we get back to, let's just say, 375, 380 on the July corn, I think we're going to see farmers selling corn.
Farmer hands are weak hands, so you're going to stay with the normal 2.4, 2.5 to 1 as well, is my guess. Is that correct?
Yeah.
All right. Chip Nellinger.
I think I don't look at it from an old crop's perspective as much as a new crop. And honestly, the corn-bean ratio, it really goes into what we were talking about earlier with, in my mind, the world carryout. If you look at beans, it's massive. If you look at corn, it's grown compared to the last 2 or 3 years, but on a relative basis, it's not burdensome at all as far as a world corn carryout perspective. So in my mind, that goes back to the value issue and saying, well, is there more downside potential in beans? So, yeah, I think that ratio, corn-bean ratio, could get closer to 2 to 1. And recently it was back out towards, I'm going off of memory here, 2.7 to 1. So I think it'd get closer to, you know, say 2.1, 2.2 eventually, but it's really going to boil down to weather and crop size and, you know, also how the supplies get distributed, I guess, out of Argentina and Brazil on their bean crop.
Hey, Joe, you can take up the ratio if you want, but I really want you to consider for a moment whether corn or soybeans or maybe wheat will lead this market.
Well, I'm not too concerned with the ratio necessarily. I think that the only thing that really matters is cost of production, and that's what's going to drive acreage. It's all about margins on the farm, and, you know, generally that 2.5 to 1, that's fine. I think that in corn, we're not necessarily as well supplied as we think we are. You know, total corn usage during the 15-16 marketing year is expected to come in at 13.76 billion. That's bigger than the projected crop. So we're actually projected to use more corn than we're going to produce. The issue is this big carry-in that we have. What that tells me is that there's not a whole lot of room for error as far as yield is concerned. USDA says we're going to be 166.8. If you start to walk that number back towards 160 and below, you could really set yourself up for a much more friendly scenario than what we're looking at right now. And I know that's all, you know, hearsay and it's all conjecture, but you don't really have that same scenario where we can tighten things up domestically and globally in the soybean market. So I think the corn, from a bigger picture perspective, might have a little bit better story here. But, you know, as we get into July, August, weather's going to be the name of the game for row crop markets. And if you were to see row crop markets take off, I'd have to argue that wheat probably goes along with it.
Is there any reason, Joe, to consider avian flu at this point? More than 40 million birds are affected. although I think the replacements will come fairly quickly.
Yeah, I think they will. USDA projects for the moment that feed usage will actually be up year over year in the 15-16 marketing year, so I'm not too concerned about it yet. I think it's more of a headline risk than anything.
What are the other items that we should discuss in the marketplace at this point? Are there outside functions? Are you worried about the U.S. dollar still? Does it challenge our ability to export in any way?
I think the dollar has a ton to do with it. I think that we have no reason for the moment to believe that the dollar is going to go sharply lower in any way. I think that the U.S. is still the best game in town in terms of currencies and in terms of the economy. But if you were to see something slip there, I think that that could cause a chain reaction into these commodity markets where the big funds are heavily short.
Yeah, I agree with that statement that especially from a day-to-day standpoint, you look at these commodity markets and it's like we've gone back to the old pattern of a risk-on day or a risk-off day. It's very noticeable in crude oil, for instance. If you see the dollar go up because the United Kingdom is having deflation or for whatever foreign reasons, bring people back to the U.S. as the haven for investment, you see crude oil, you see the investment flowing back out of that risky asset. And since these commodities, corn, soybeans, wheat, especially in the summer during a weather market, are the epitome of risky commodity markets, very volatile, they tend to be, I think we are not going to be seeing very much willing, long investor participation for the next few months.
How do we, speaking of wheat, Wayne, how do we play the wheat market in the United States into feed grains for corn in particular? They have had an unusual event now, given the last several years of considerably or really dry conditions in the plains and the Southwest. A lot of rain, more rain than they actually need. So we were talking about a really good wheat crop, and then suddenly one that probably will be disease-ridden and may very well deteriorate very quickly.
Yeah, yes, I think that that will be feed wheat as we come out of that, and that's going to come back in as feed wheat. Will we lose enough with all the extra moisture we had to help some of the production? Will it all be diseased? Will we still have enough? The world stocks of wheat are so big. Russia, unless they do continue to have, in 2 weeks, they're forecast to get moisture back over there. How much will their crop lose as far as this goes along? They have hurt us tremendously as far as exports and have stayed very, very competitive in the world and undercut us. So, I guess it's going to be weather, but it will hurt our corn. A lot of this wheat will go into feed if we do have the disease problems.
Can I ask this question? I asked this question last week as well. On old crop remaining unpriced corn and soybeans, are you still willing sellers today, even if you were willing sellers last week, are you still willing sellers today of that crop? And maybe you can tell me what you thought about it last week. We'll start with you, Elaine Cubb.
I think logistically, I and any farmers are probably starting to get more willing day by day just because there's a time limit here. Eventually, you're going to need to get your bins empty for the new harvest. I don't like these prices, but I'm not particularly bullish. I don't have a hope for better prices in the near future. So I guess, sell on the rally.
Wayne Nelson?
I have to go along with Elaine. I think that any short rallies here, if you've got a bin full of corn, that it needs to be being sold. The beans, there's lots of places to look for some really good basis levels. I would probably even consider moving some on that, but along the way, I think that the corn has to be sold on rallies.
Chip Nallinger.
Corn, absolutely. I think short covering rallies over the next 1 to 6 weeks, you really have to take advantage of. For the most part, we've been out of beans for a while. Seems like I've been bearish beans for 2 years, and they've just now starting to break. But I think if you are out of beans, it's probably a good place down near the lows here to come back in and get some cheap call coverage, couple, two, three strikes out of the money, and play the potential for a summer weather scare if you want. I think you have to be willing sellers of any rallies in the short run here.
And Joe Vaklovic.
sell the cash corn, own call options. They're cheap enough. Make sure you buy an option that takes you at least out through that, you know, third week in August timeframe, either the September outrights or the short-dated new crop options. You want to be involved if there's going to be some kind of weather scare. But I couldn't imagine the basis gets any better in June, July. It's tough to argue that flat price improves a whole lot without a weather issue, and you don't want to bank your whole marketing plan on a weather issue. But I do like owning the calls. I think they're cheap enough. It's a defined risk position. It allows you to logistically speaking, you know, start moving this corn now.
And for new crop, do you have a series of advice that you've been working through with farmers as well?
Well, there's not a whole lot you can do with these prices right now. The saving grace for some guys might be crop insurance. You know, we've got an insurance guarantee that's quite a bit higher than where the board is at right now. So you've really got to take a look at that insurance guarantee, match it up with where the board's priced today, and really define what your risk is or try to figure that out. You may not necessarily have as much risk in this market right now as you think, given the crop insurance and given the assumption that you've made at least a few sales.
Well, I think Joe hit it on the head a little while ago. You got to look at that potential revenue, and it's unlikely we get, due to high cost production this year, and the fact that we're well under it. It's unlikely that we get a rally back to what makes us profitable in corn. So that becomes very, very hard to make the decision. Hey, let's pick a number, $4 D's futures. We've got all the risk of a big crop ahead of us, and we could end up much lower. What do we need to do? So there may be ways to, even though it's a hard decision, protect your downside of revenue. Yeah, you have crop insurance to fall back on, but there may be some tough decisions that need to be made at sub-profitable levels in corn, and we haven't faced that for many, many years.
Elaine, I've asked this question of others before, but has the marketplace built enough risk premium into the price of corn at this point for new crop?
I think so, because, you know, if you look at this from the standpoint of the buyers who are going to try and buy this product for as cheap as they can, that's why risk premium gets put in. You know, there would be the risk that they might not get enough corn. I don't think that there's any real risk at this point, weather-wise or production-wise, acreage-wise, anything. There's not enough risk realistically, fundamentally, for anybody to be sparking a rally today.
And it has to do with, a lot to do with, the amount of carryout that's available?
Yeah, exactly. There's you know, an ample amount of grain here and the rest of the world. You know, most of the Northern Hemisphere has adequate growing conditions for their feed grain.
Any final word, Wayne Nelson? We'll start with you.
Well, I think that basically we all said that it's a weather event that's going to have to happen to be the saving grace for this market as far as prices go along. I think there's a lot of old corn in farmers' hands, and we need to be very aggressive at marketing that. And I think we want to take advantage of any short rally to $4 or $4.20 as far as the new crop corn, and getting very aggressive with that.
Joe Vaklavec, a final word from you?
Just remember, it's not all bad news here. We've got phenomenal demand for corn, the best ever demand for U.S. corn projected, best ever demand for U.S. soybean projected. You know, there are good things out there right now, and these markets do change. There's a lot of time to market new crop, be patient, kind of weigh the risks.
Chip Nellinger?
Yeah, just to add on to both of those comments, you know, this is probably 1 year of any of the last few where there are strategies that you can, on a rally, have your cake and eat it too, whether that's some sort of a cash strategy or something in the options. Take advantage of that rally so that if there is the second year in a row of big crops and we make new lows into fall, we're protecting our risk. So I agree. Not doom and gloom, but, boy, rallies are for selling, in our opinion.
And Elaine Cupp.
Well, I'll give a nugget of hope from an analyst perspective that maybe we'll see some signs here in the next couple of days, and perhaps by Tuesday when they'll have the crop progress report, we might see signs of freeze damage. The Dakotas and the Minnesota, southern Minnesota, were planted very early during a dry spring, so there was, you know, significant amounts of corn that were probably out of the ground. Probably wasn't too damaged, but I guess we'll see.
That's Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska. Our other panelists today included Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing from Morton, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and Joe Vaklavec of Standard Grain from Chicago, Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.